The date today is the 29th of April, and I'm sitting with Roberta King, who lived at 94 Borden Street from 1976 to 2005. Let me ask you, what were your ages at that time that determined some of the kinds of questions I ask you? So how old were you in 76?
I would have been 33 or so, like that. Okay. Well, I mean, I can do the math, but a head start. Early 30s.
And what was your situation in terms of family, who you were living there with at that time?
It was myself, my husband, Ron Squire, and I had David, who would be 5, mm-hmm. my oldest, and Andrew, my middle, would have been about 2, okay. coming up to 2. They both were about to turn 2 and 5. Mm-hmm. So very young.
So, and Vera, you see, that's why I ask what your ages were, because I won't ask you about dating.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember what prompted you and your husband to move into this neighborhood? What was the appeal?
Well, as I said, I had years before lived on Rochdale, so I knew the area. And through our connection with somebody at Rochdale, we were renting on Palmerston. And we wanted to get more space. It wasn't working out. And I walked around with my kids in the wagon. Mm-hmm. And I saw a for rent sign on the house and got it. And it suited us very well.
And you stayed for many years.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Big, big, spacious house. It was like a farmhouse. And we had just come in from living in the country, so I needed the space. It worked out well.
What were some of the features of the neighborhood that made it work out well?
Well, it was quite different. There were a lot of kids, families with young children, and there was street life, people mm-hmm. out on their porches. There was a woman, you probably have heard of her, a few doors up north on Borden, who used to sit out with her accordion at night and play.
Oh, no, I haven't heard at all.
And the kids would be out, you know, kicking around, and it was so close to everything. The location was the best. And as I say, the house, the space in it, and school at the end of the street was perfect.
So your children went to King Eddie?
No, they went to Kensington.
Oh, what?
Oh. Yeah, they went to Kensington. I had heard a bit about Kensington Community School. I don't know. And I went down and saw it, and I liked it a lot. I liked the principal. And so I put David in there.
And it was a good school.
It was. Well, there were some rocky bits that I won't go into, but yeah. The thing about it, it was open to me. I was welcome there. There was a lot of families in the school. Lauren Brown had a real open door community policy that I liked a lot.
It sounds to me as if community is something that you like, because you said the neighborhood was friendly.
Well, even in Rochdale, you know, that was a co-op, that was an attempt at a kind of community. And yeah, and also it was an educational experiment. The whole Dennis thing came out, and it was all how, it was back right then, how to. You want your children, how will they learn, what do they learn? Right back then, it was clear to me that had not been worked out.
Yeah.
So that was interesting to me. They had the open classroom, open room system, you know, part of the school was open classroom.
At the Kensington.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So that's what we did.
Would you talk a little bit more about the sense of community and the children playing outside in this neighborhood when you lived here when your children were young?
Well, my kids could find playmates on the street. They went to the same school. No, they didn't all go to the same school, because there was King Eddie, there was Catholic school, there was Lord Lad, you know, it was a mixture. But they played on the... I don't know. I mean, there was some nice kids and some not so nice kids. There was that whole drama of, you know, what are they doing now? And
what about the adults? Was there a sense of community with them, or was it mainly the children?
There was, again, half and half. Some of the parents of the kids you would get to know and share, you know, they'd know where their kids were, your kids could go there. Others, not so much. different strokes, right? Mm-hmm. But like Dinny and Abraham became very close friends, and Josh lived with us pretty much. He was like one of my boys. Steve up the street, I knew his parents. Yeah, there was a young family just up, 106, because that's where Maranishi is now. Steve and Mario was, you know, different. It was good.
Who made up the neighborhood in terms of different ethnic groups and languages spoken? Who was here in 76 and then through the years?
Yeah. Well, I think there was a lot of Portuguese families on the street, mm-hmm. and Asian. Mm-hmm. And it was starting to be more white middle class people, just beginning. But when I came in, more Asian and Portuguese and, you know, lower end, there were student residences. There's some houses that are rooming houses for students. I don't know if they still are.
What was that like? How were the students behaving?
Oh, loud, and they offered my kids alcohol.
So they were not.
Oh, they were welcome. No, they were. They were not close to me, and you know, my kids are just. You know, I should have been more well-educated at home. I had no idea that was even a possibility. But, you know, you learn as they learn. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
But they know, they didn't... It was... I didn't have concerns about really my kids coming and going freely, and they played a lot in the back alley, Croft. And I certainly always kept an eye out, and did Denny. We always kept an eye out. I know some of the parents would just maybe not even be there. I don't know. I know.
Tell me about Croft and your children playing in the lake.
Oh, well, that was the playground, Croft, and the playground at King Eddie. They would ride their bikes up, and that's how they learned to ride their bikes.
In the lane.
The wagon, in the lane. That was where they always were. And, you know, I'd sit out and watch, because there were cars. Not so many, but, you know. And that's where all the kids would end up.
So the lane was a wonderful place.
It was.
I guess it was a little less busy than the street.
They at the night in the evening they would be more, because if there were people out, like adults out, they'd be in the front. But their main thing was up and down, endless. And it's funny. I have this one memory. My middle son is born at the end of November, mm-hmm. and I have this picture and this memory of his birthday party, and they're all out on Croft riding their bikes in t-shirts, and it's warm
in November.
It was a fluke day. It was just a fluke warm day.
Yeah,
but
it was in the lane.
Yeah, always. That's all where they would hang out.
I still see it happening, and I play with my grandson in the lane sometimes.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's an easy way, because you know you just watch the ends, and if there's a car, you know, then yeah.
Yeah, and there is less traffic there than on the street.
Yeah, there was also a lot of Central Tech students would come and hang out down there too, but that didn't bother me. Sometimes there'd be a part missing out of my car, that did bother me, but then that's
like,
urban life.
Like a mirror or something like that?
Like other things, starter motors and things.
Oh.
Well, I had for a while this car that the hood didn't lock and didn't.
Oh, so they would help themselves to.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a city.
Yeah.
So. And, you know, my kids, I think they got a great education growing up in the city at that time. The Toronto school board, the old one, was just getting, like, heating up to a fine kind of, you know, vision about what school could be. And Kensington was good, and the meeting all the different kids in the city and all the different stuff going on. Was really rich, because we had come in partly because we were living in the country and were thinking, this isn't so good, we need to do something. So then they were in St. Stephen's daycare, and then I got involved on the board there because they were there, and I got really interested in daycare. And then through being on the board, I got connected to other, well, Olivia was on the board, and other people in the community. And, I'm still very, I love this. I know every nook and cranny, I think. I think my spore is everywhere.
It sounds to me as if, I'm not ignoring the fact that they would help themselves to parts of your car, to pieces of your car. But it sounds like it was a fairly safe neighborhood.
I felt that, well, I also found, you know, I would say it was, but I would go out in the alley before my kids came out. I would check things, and I found the syringes. Mm-hmm. I found a set of brass knuckles that I have to this day, because it's like, who leaves their brass knuckles on their head? I don't know. But no, it never really bothered me. I just thought this is part of the deal. And,
yeah. Well, I guess you're saying city living or just living.
City living. And we weren't in a gated, we were open to the community. And you know, by choice, to see, you wanted to see what was going on. And it's very mixed, very colorful. Always characters, you know.
What are some of the characters that you remember? God. There must be a few that you remember most clearly.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, there's some of the older guys on Borden who, I guess, they're on Workman's Comp or something, and all they just walk up and down the street or lean on their fences all day and talk to everybody. There were those guys. And there were some hard cases from the market, the walking wounded, as we call them.
And what do you mean when you talk about that?
Suffering from hard knocks, I always think, but, uh-huh. You know, maybe mentally not so stable, mm-hmm. Sense of desperation, mm-hmm. That kind of thing.
So would you have been more protective of your children not if you
all.
Saw them around?
No.
So you didn't feel that they were a danger?
No, mm-hmm. They're not a danger. Mm-hmm. And also, I really wanted my kids to know about life in a community. Mm-hmm. I was very protected. I grew up in the suburbs, and all I could think about was getting out, getting downtown.
Well, you sure did. Well, you also mentioned before I turned the tape on that one of your sons is still living right here on the
Yeah,
Street.
He left for a while after I moved out, but then he's got a room in the house right next door. I think it's temporary, but it's been temporary for a while. And,
but he's here because...
He's very... And the other thing about my kids, they have friends that they've had since daycare, since junior kindergarten.
Since Borden Street.
And they still are all connected, and so I think that's so amazing and foundational. I never had that. They were connected right from the get-go.
And you're still in touch with Dinny?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Because she gave me your name.
Oh yeah. No,
but
I'm
you're
in touch,
still in
with,
touch
Dinny.
With her.
Well, Josh and Andrew, Oliver, my youngest, are very close, and I will always be close with Abraham and Dinny.
Yeah.
And Naomi and Josh.
Do you remember when they changed the streets in terms of the cars going all the way from College to Bloor? Do you remember when that change happened?
You mean when they...
The maze, whatever
it?
You call it, yeah.
Yeah.
And did you have any feelings about that?
Well, I was happy to interfere with the traffic because, it can be used. I mean, it's a huge... It has grown to be a horrific issue in this city, I think. Cars.
Meaning what?
Just the cars, mm-hmm. and the level of driving skills. And now I think it just seems less, you used to be able to sit out on your porch and there would be, but now zoom, 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 and people don't tend to use their fronts as often, I don't think.
Did you use your porch a lot?
Yeah.
When
oh,
you
yeah.
first came here?
Yeah.
You did.
I had it so it had a gate so I could let the kids, I'd leave the front door open and they'd go out on the porch. We had toys out there and they'd hang out and
so
watch.
So it was an extension of your home.
Oh, absolutely.
Right to the sidewalk,
oh,
in fact.
Well, I would shut the gate,
yes.
So they'd stay. But yeah, I mean, it certainly was an extension. Mm-hmm. As was the backyard.
And back lane, in fact.
And back lane. And also, I was one of the mothers. And there was Dinny and me and Ollie had another friend, Nora, who was on Brunswick. And we kind of sometimes pooled. Like, if there was a mother there, it's okay, I'm going to go to the market. It's okay, I know you're going to the market. I got them. So there was a bit of that. And that was really nice because that really builds community.
Yeah, I was just thinking that exactly that. That is a sense of community.
Yeah.
That
Yeah.
The children knew the parents, yeah. And the parents knew the children, and yeah. You cared about them.
And it was even mixed, too, because Steve's mom and dad would eventually, at first not, but and they were a young Portuguese family, and then at some point they said, well, is Steve with you? We're going to go, and I'd say, yeah, and they'd be fine. So it wasn't just, you know...
The Caucasian.
Yeah. It was kind of
and let's go in that direction a little. How much mixing and sense of community was there with the different groups, different ethnic groups?
Well, a lot depended, of course, on the ages of your children, because that would be the magnet. I mean, you have to have reasons. On Halloween, when everyone would be out, I found that there was more mixing for me with Portuguese at first, because they had kids my kids' age. Mm-hmm. And I met Mario's parents, who are still there, and Steve and Ricky...
There's a story that goes with that.
Oh yeah, but I don't know. It's not my place to tell it, really. But yeah. But there weren't a lot of Asian kids on my street. But in daycare, mm-hmm. they mixed a lot with all the kids, because then they had like an open mm-hmm. forum. And I guess that's about all I can think of that were here, pretty much. Yeah. So, I mean, for my kids, it was, if they were on the street, then they were a potential person to play with, or from school, or from the daycare. It was all, so those were all then.
All the kids played with each
they
other.
Did. They yeah. did, yeah. I mean, a language could be a barrier, you know, at some point. But
I suppose the younger children, if they spoke Portuguese at home, or Mandarin or something... That they didn't know, but by the time they got to age 6 and they were going to school, then they all learned English.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
there was more possibility of the mm-hmm. children communicating.
My kids
learned
how to swear in all the language. They heard all the derogatory names for things.
They must have been proud.
I was.
That they were multilingual.
Well, they certainly have that in their makeup now. Like they, you know, it's funny because at one point when I was working with educators later, this is years later, and Ollie, of course, was born later, so he was younger, and we were thinking of getting out of the city back to the country because we had land there now, and this fellow, Tim Curran, said to me, promise me you won't take Oliver out of Toronto and put him in a high school in Fenland Falls. Promise me you won't do that.
Oh.
And we talked about it, and thought, he's right. This is where they need to be. This is where they're going to get the best.
So you've really enjoyed living out in the country, but also living
yeah.
in the heart of the city.
Yeah.
But not on a major street, a quiet street where there are busy streets
well,
around.
Well, it is kind of major street, but it's
not
a bit quieter, but it's not
yeah.
like living on, like now,
on college.
In Davenport or college. Yeah, it
yeah.
was a little quieter.
Yeah.
But a busy street, nonetheless. There's always something going on.
Yeah. And a kind of vital street. Sounds like there was always something human going on.
It was. There was.
Yeah.
There was. It was a really good, lucky place to land.
Would you just tell me which your... the east-west street that was closest to you, what street was that?
Well, we were almost in the middle between college and Ulster.
Okay.
Those were our top and bottom.
Would you talk a little bit about both of those streets in terms of stores, anything commercial on... Ulster or
well,
college?
Ulster had the park store, as we called it, the store across from the park on
Brunswick. It's a corner store.
Margaret Fairley Park,
mm-hmm.
which was big. That was the first place they could walk to.
Uh-huh.
That was the first place they could ride their bike to. And one day when Oliver walked out of the house at 2, walked out of the house, he walked to the park by himself.
Did you realize he had gone or he was gone?
I got in the shower and I told my husband and my 2 older children, I'm in the shower now, keep an eye on Oliver. Came out of the shower and I'm, where is he?
He was in the park.
The worst moments of my life.
But he was okay.
And it's funny, there's all these people at the park. This is a commute, and I ran, and it was unusually busy. It was a nice day, and it was packed. And it's like... I am panicking, and I'm trying to get my eyes to look, literally, look. I don't see him. I run around, and then I come back, look, and finally this woman came over, and she put her hand on my arm. She said, "He's here. Come with me." And she showed Oliver. She had seen him walk up. She thought he was with two men, but they kept going, and he turned in, and she thought, this is weird. And she kept her eye on him the whole time. She saw me come and with pinwheel eyeballs, and she said, "Oh, there, no." Then I came back, and she tried to give it. Finally, she was waiting for me, and she got me. And she said, "There he is. I think I know who you're looking for."
She saw.
So that was a bit, that park was a great resource, because it's tiny, and it was a very quiet spot. Just off Ulster there, it was just the perfect size. You could see it all.
You know, they're doing major renovations to it right now.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's going to be fabulous. I mean, it's a wonderful park.
Yeah, it is.
Already.
Yeah.
But they're going to make some improvements. So it still gets a huge amount of use.
Yeah, I imagine.
Yeah.
And a lot, there were a lot of kids. I don't know, people tell me, I mean, still, that there's not so many young families around.
Probably not as many, but mm-hmm. there certainly are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were also, you people in Brunswick, well, Nora and Rod were doing masters at U of T. So there was a U of T, certainly there's a U of T presence up and down the street, the academics up there and mm-hmm. the students. And
like did you have any feelings or emotions about the whole issue of U of T being a neighbor of ours, being a... So
well, you know, I didn't used to. Ron graduated, my partner graduated from U of T, Loire. And I love the campus. That's another resource. I use that. I walk. That was my walk. I'd go. I love Hart House. I love the cafeteria there. But I don't, you know, I mean, there's a level where it's just a greedy corporate hog. And I see that. And I don't admire that. And I think that at some place that comes into play. It never... has impacted on me, but I can see that that's what's going on.
It's interesting that you see two sides.
Oh, yeah.
You see it as a place that is pretty and you could go and mm-hmm. walk and mm-hmm. enjoy the beauty of it,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time, as you say, greedy
corporate hog. And that's its true nature. And I wouldn't, well, we're getting off subject here.
No, that's part
but,
of it.
Yeah, but it never really impinged on me, and I used it well, and so did Ron. I mean, I would still even use the library there, and I often would use U of T academics for research and stuff.
I sometimes like to go on Saturdays and watch all the people taking pictures, all the wedding brides and grooms.
Yes.
Their
oh, yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. No, it's a great walk, and I like the little courtyard at night. I used to go and do Tai Chi there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And I hate this idea of building on the back circle, the back campus or whatever. I think, please don't build anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm no longer a player.
Sure, but I'm interested in how you saw the university, because it's our neighbor.
I saw it at Queen's Park and U of T were the places I like to go and walk.
Mm-hmm.
And I missed the old greenhouse that was on.
Oh, yes.
I missed every tree they cut down. I grieve it. I miss it. But, you know, that's life. And I still, when I'm here, I'll do that walk. And the other walk was down to behind Bickford, the dog park. You know, if you walk down Harvard.
Okay. Oh, right, to the other side. It's
where the river.
Just before Christie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's a lovely.
Yeah. Great for sledding in the winter.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's come back to the stores. So you talked about that corner store.
So Mario Brothers on the corner was a fixture. And, you know, so I often didn't go to the market because Mario Brothers was such a great store.
Uh-huh. So they had fresh produce?
Yes, they did. They had a butcher, fresh produce. It's a good store. And it was like seconds from my house.
Yeah.
And it's funny, the other corner, I know it's always been something, but it's like Bag Factory or something. I never have noticed it or gone there, really. So that was college, was Mario Brothers and the school.
Mm-hmm.
Mars,
oh,
the bank. Yeah. I've had that same bank.
So you use that bank.
But the eating places were not of interest to me because I never really, we're not an eating out kind of family. I had small children. I want to make sure they were properly fed. And Ulster, the park store, and also the one on the corner of Lippincott and Ulster. A really nice man and his wife. I think she still lives there. I think he's died.
Was that the pharmacy?
No. No, it was another...
Oh, no, it's Ulster. I was talking about college.
Yeah. Ulster and Lippincott. Uh-huh. And then there was another one in Bathurst, never went there. This was that corner, and the guy was so sweet. He actually gave me like a bottle of wine at Christmas and stuff. Oh, very sweet man.
So that was definitely a community store.
And he knew everybody. Yeah. And, you know, he'd say, if you didn't have, oh, get it next time. Like, oh. Very old school. He was a lovely old school Portuguese guy. And his wife, the park store, kind of, they were always nice people, but it would change hands mm-hmm. a couple of times. But, my, you know, it was like the first store my kids could go to and stuff like that.
By themselves.
And, you know, in terms of stores, my orientation was more up to Bloor, where there'd be Book City and, you know, all the stuff up there. I went to the market. I didn't really go up and down college too much. Mm-hmm. Spadina.
Okay, I want to touch on the market and Bloor Street since you've talked about both. Mm-hmm. Let's start with the market. How did you use that? Or did you use it?
Well, then going back, when I lived in the country, we had a room on St. Andrew, which is right in the market. Mm-hmm. And we stayed there to work. We were working with the film board and we'd be in town for a long time.
So you rented that space?
We rented a room in Gary Brick's house on St. Andrew, which is now something else, but it was a beautiful house at the time. All one of the few left right in the market because it was west of Spadina. So the market was my home then. Oh. And
For walking, for shopping?
Sure, everything.
What kinds of shopping did you do in the market?
Everything. I bought everything in the market.
So you didn't go to supermarkets?
I shopped every day. I'd come back and shop every day. Well, it was like right on my street.
Yeah.
No, I never went to the supermarkets. And I'd go in, sooner or later, I'd go in every store. Just because it was there. And I loved it. I loved living there.
Yeah.
And it was a nice antidote because in the country, you know, we'd go back and there'd be isolation and nice and peaceful and then come and live in the market and it would be hurly-burly. It was great. So I forgot that connection. So then when I moved back, I still knew some of the businesses. And everything. Although, you know, we'd go through periods of not having coffee and being really... So we'd end up going out for coffee. We used to always go to Mars for that.
Do you have their muffins too, or just the coffee?
Yes, we would probably get a muffin too. That was our little, you know, walk on the wild side.
Likewise.
Because we worked at home.
Mars
we worked
your,
at home.
Yeah, so that was an outing.
That was, to get out and do that walk.
So the market was a really significant
part
of your life.
It was.
Yeah.
And we'd do the... Festival Lights, when it used to be so tiny that you knew everybody that was there. You'd recognize everybody that was there. And it was kind of a bigger... A lot of the daycare, St. Stephen's was there. And Kensington people would be... I'd recognize them because we went to school there. And I do not like shopping any other way. I mean, this would... I bought my clothes there. I bought everything there. And it's changed, but, you know, it kind of, the other thing I like about it is it sort of resists change.
Well,
like me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I moved to Toronto in 1964.
Oh, yeah.
And York, and I came from near San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
And Yorkville was a little bit like that.
Yes.
And then it seemed to me one day I blinked and Yorkville was what, it was gone and it was different. And I agree with you that the market is changing a bit, but it seems to be resisting. But if they're going to build that Loblaws there, it could really take a big
Well, it's like Yorkville, the real estate was too expensive to float that, and that hasn't really happened yet, but we all know.
Yeah, but I agree with you, the market's a wonderful place. Yeah. I love it too.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I have stopped doing the events because they're corporate. The Festival of Lights, it's...
So it has changed.
They get, you know, like a lot of grassroots events, they kind of grow and flourish, and then someone thinks this is good and takes it over on it.
Do you ever get there for Pedestrian Sunday?
Not so much.
Yeah.
I have a friend who lives there. Cheryl Larmer lives on Bellevue. Mm-hmm. And she says that she can't even go out in the market on Pedestrian Sunday. She lives there. It's her backyard. It's her front yard, and she loves it. She's there all the time. She says she stays home, it's you can't get in the store. She says the merchants aren't wild about it because it's all up and down and up and down and up and down.
So nobody's going in. Don't
really like it. It's a thing. And now, you know, Festival of Lights is a thing. It's kind of people coming in, mm-hmm. but, you know, which is good. But it's no longer whatever it was. It's not community based anymore.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to move north. We talked about the market, mm-hmm. college. But you said you sometimes used Bloor Street. What was on Bloor Street that
well,
you
would it's, call? It was, for me, the main hub. We occasionally Doonies and Book City. And there was I remember it in the very early days on Harvard.
What was that?
They had... Is it called the Flying Monkey? The first, 3HO on mm-hmm. Palmerston started a health food store. I think it might have been the Flying Monkey or the Golden Temple or something, but it was the first ever food store where you could go and buy beans and rice and, you know, all the health food stuff, because we were always trying to do that. And Bloor was also had some, let me try and remember what it was, the hardware store. Have some small clothing stores. I think I bought kids' clothes there and maybe shoes, I can't remember. But I never went downtown. I went downtown when I had to for business meeting or that. I never, very rarely went downtown to shop. Maybe to buy sheets I might go to, you know, something like that, or an appliance I might. Although, yeah.
But you so, really used this neighborhood.
I did. Yeah. This is my bailiwick. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it served me well, and I liked it. I liked it a lot. Central Tech, I should also mention. Oh, my
Please
God.
Do.
That's another resource. The track was my track. I would run up in Central Tech.
And run around
and
the track.
And run around the track and then run back. And it probably kept me alive for certain periods of my life. And I'd walk there, and the kids would be sitting in the bleachers, and I'd be running, and they'd say, "Go, Foggy, go. Go, Foggy, go." I didn't mind. Or they'd say, "Can you run any slower?" That kind of thing. So,
did you find it funny at the time?
I did. I totally would have done the same thing. Yeah. I have great empathy for high school students. And I have filmed at Central Tech. I filmed in every school. I filmed in Kensington, Lord Lansdowne.
Documentary
yes.
film?
Yes, because of myself and my partner, we did a lot with the Toronto School Board on bullying. The first one was Dropping Back. That's when I shot at Central Tech, because kids at that time, and don't ask me the year, were leaving school, dropping out.
In general or Central Tech in particular?
It was a trend. Kids were leaving. And the school board was concerned why and what to do, what programs bring them back. So they were establishing programs, and we did a documentary on kids that had left and come back. And I did one at Central Tech. And I just love that school. People go, "Oh, Central Tech." Like, it's a great school. Yeah. And I've been in like, "Oh, Oakwood's supposed to be," and, "Oh my God, what a shitty school." You know, it's funny. And of course, I know from shooting in schools that they turn on a dime. Like, it could be a fabulous school, and then whatever happens in the next year, it's bereft.
I've interviewed some people who were, one was a vice principal and taught there for many years, another taught there for many years. These are people in their 80s, and they loved that school. Loved it with their hearts and souls.
Yeah.
They loved
it. You can feel it. Yeah. And it has such an interesting student population, I think. And making that film just, and teachers, I mean, this the guy that was the subject, he was down and out, and older. And he came back, which takes guts, but they just, and you know, he was turned everything. It was a great story. It was a gift to be working for the board at that time, and everything we made is like gone.
What do you mean gone?
People call me asking where the films are. I don't know what they do with them. They have no interest. Maybe the interest just isn't there. This is on bullying.
certainly
conflict negotiation in schools, which was, there was a big program that they had where they were trying to teach the skills of mediation in, you know, 7th and 8th and high schools. They had peer mediation. They were really trying to work on it. I don't know what's happened there. And
do you not have copies of this?
I have everything, but it's in fact theirs, but I have everything. I make sure people get it because that's the point of making them.
But all these issues are totally relevant, current.
I know, but it's a mess. I don't know. It's a mess. It has been mortally wounded by Mike Harris' government, and I don't know if it's just so sad and it's so bad.
Who was funding these films? Were you hired to make them, or did you have independent funding?
We got some funding from the Toronto Board, and then we managed, sometimes in some cases we managed to find additional funding from federal or provincial government or
but film. They sound as if they should be all over right
they
now.
They should be. I know. I find the hardest thing, well, we're off subject, is not making films. It's getting them distributed, getting them properly used. It's like there's some gaps. And there's new stuff coming out all the time. People look to that, to the big maw of, you know, more and more stuff. But I'm going to make an effort not to get off the subject here, because I could. But. So, Central Tech. It was a huge resource, that track. And I hear they want to put a bubble and astroturf it and all this bullshit.
Oh, they're talking about doing that at U of T.
They talk...
A Central Tech too? I didn't know that. Mm-hmm.
Well, at present day, I am now involved with a man who I knew who, for years, lived with his wife and children in Lippincott.
Oh.
So I'm back. So I might be living there for a while. I don't know what we're going to do, but...
So he's on Lippincott as we speak.
Yes. Oh, well, so he's living with me, but he's still dealing with the house on Lippincott and what to
do. So both of you might come back to Lippincott.
We might, yeah, because I'm in the, you know, I'm here a lot.
Uh-huh.
But,
well, we would welcome you back.
Yeah.
No, you would welcome you back,
oh,
too.
Oh, I would. And, you know, I never walk through this neighborhood that I don't run into somebody.
Uh-huh.
And I walk through my new neighborhood.
What's your current neighborhood?
I'm up at, I'm on Davenport on the cliff.
Yes.
At Dufferin. You know, Regal Road is at one side, and then I'm on the other side, just like three houses. Uh-huh. West of Dufferin.
Okay, so you're not far, but you are.
Oh, it's a million miles away.
Uh-huh.
So partly because there's no street life, I'm on a cliff, which I really like. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to live on Davenport. But there's no connectivity like there was on board. But that's a different time in my life, and I'm okay with it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but I love that. And, you know, we also had a dog, so that was another... People would all know who our dog was, and there were other dogs, and there were a lot of common interests with me and my neighbors, and I wouldn't say it went much above Ulster or down a lot past Van Cunnott.
Yeah.
It was kind of just in that little chunk. Certainly Van Cunnott. I know Irene on the corner of Croft and Van Cunnott. She's been there forever. That's an interesting story.
She's somebody I should meet.
My daughter.
I don't know her.
She's in that little cottage on the corner of Croft and Van Cunnott.
Has she been here a long time?
Forever. Since I moved here.
Well, when we turn the tape off, maybe we'll talk about that, because I'm happy to meet her if she's been here for a long time.
Quite a story, too.
What about, I don't know if you had any connection or interest in synagogues and churches in the neighborhood. Aware of those?
Well, yeah. When I lived on St. Andrew, we lived next to one of the oldest synagogues in Toronto, and it was so beautiful, but so falling down. But there was something so soulful about that place. And I loved the comings and goings. And once I went in, because the cat had kittens, and someone wanted a kitten, and we went in, and it was like back in time. It's so scruffy. I don't understand. It can be so historically huge and scruffy, and nothing
and
ever
neglected. You're saying
neglected,
yeah.
But in a way, I kind of liked it because it made it a little bit more you know, like I could sit on the steps there and not feel I was, you know, causing any harm. And I loved being neighbors there. And, you know, I still think of Cecil. Cecil was a synagogue at one point.
Yeah. That's not this neighborhood.
Yeah, I know.
So I'm thinking of...
Yeah,
there is
this one. Well...
There is one on Brunswick, north of Harvard. But...
Yes.
When you were in the neighborhood, were you aware of people using the churches, the synagogues, or was that not
I was
much?
Aware of the one being used on Brunswick. Uh-huh. And certainly, I was aware that, you know, the JCC is a huge part of this community, too. Uh-huh. Was for me.
Did your family use it?
I did a lot. I don't know, Ron, he still went to, he had the U of T thing, so I think maybe, they had Pilates. They had a great...
At the JCC?
Yeah, and Nia. Remember the Nia?
Yes, I do, I do.
Love the Nia.
Mm-hmm. So you
but
did
synagogues,
Pilates?
Not so much. Or, you know, not really.
Okay, let's come back to the JCC. You're saying you used it, but your family didn't. Are you saying that?
I'm trying to remember if they did. Andrew, later in life, started using it as an adult. But I remember just myself going. I can't mm-hmm. say for sure. Because they were physically active, sporty guys, but...
But not at the JCC.
I can't remember ever talking about them being in a program or the swimming. I don't know. But
you did Nia and Pilates
and swimming
there.
And I joined.
So you were a member.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And it was a great resource. But I must say, when the Nia left and I got other stuff going, I guess is part of it.
Yeah, so. That's a place that I use a lot.
Yeah, I bet you're so close. Yeah. I loved it when that class was there.
I'm just going back to. Sorry.
I was going to say, I still see Martha and Roberta occasionally, the two teachers. Remember? Do you remember them?
No.
They're still teaching.
I was going to come back to the homes just for a minute to talk about two things. One is the back gardens or back lawns. Or did you have some space behind your house? And if you did, how did you use it?
What I had a big backyard. Uh-huh. And I told you that it had been rented, I guess, by a group home called Nangamarga. And they had gardened the whole. There was a little sort of very shady area near the house because we were facing west. Some big trees, and they had planted the whole garden, which I kept some of it because I did grow food. I grew some vegetables, and I planted stuff. I'm not. I come from a family of horticulturists, and I'm the non, right? So. But, and we used to put the tent up in the backyard, and the kids would always have the tent there, and we'd put a little pool up. We always used it a lot.
Your family used it.
And it was, a lot of kids would be there. It was fenced by then. Mrs. Duramis was next door, Mr. and Mrs. Duramis, who were both Portuguese-speaking and spoke no English, and hated my backyard and those kids.
Because there was too much activity?
They wanted everything shut down all the time. The two of them lived in that house, in the basement in the first floor, and the rest was empty, waiting for the children to come back or something. They were a bit odd.
But they did not like the fact that
they didn't
there was
like
all this
it.
Life
it was so
and joy.
So loud and noisy. But you know what? I would say I'm sorry, but that's life.
Yeah.
And then Denny would... But it's funny, because Abraham built a fort for Josh in the backyard and a sandbox and all this. I got the tent. I got the right thing, like the seedy tent that they like to go in, and just, and boards and hammers and stuff. So it was a kind of, it's like that place down that used to have down on the lake shore, you know, where they could go and build stuff. What was it called? You know, that really crazy park that's since been shut down. I don't know.
But anyway, yours got used a lot.
And also the other thing about our house and our backyard, Ron and I worked at home. We were always there. There were always parents there. So, you know, people knew that. Kids knew that.
Uh-huh.
So that also, because I think a lot of people were working after school and stuff. So it was, and I was happy to do that. And I still know those kids. Yeah. I still know them.
Yeah. you and Ron were working at home. Mm-hmm. At that time, were there other people that you knew who worked at home?
Abraham.
And what's his work?
He's in real estate.
Uh-huh. So he worked from home.
It's funny because you did kind of know who was around during the day. There were a couple of others I can't remember right offhand.
And what about women? Were a lot of the women working or not? Were they? What was the situation with women and work?
Well, the women I knew, would be like Dinny and Nora, they were working or doing some kind of postgraduate work at U of T. And so, yeah, I would say that I think there were obviously women who were in their house all day, but I didn't meet them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd meet them sometimes in the market, but we weren't really on a drop-by basis or anything like that. So I have friends from outside the neighborhood that would sometimes come by during who worked at home that would sometimes come by during the day, but no, mainly not. Mm-hmm. You know, not a lot of women out in their gardens or that kind of thing. No.
And the last question about homes. Did you make any changes in terms of heating and cooling your home? Or it stayed, whatever you bought, it stayed that way?
No.
Yeah. So that was already...
Yeah, we weren't fixing it. We were renters.
Oh. You rented all those years?
Yes. When I rented that house, mm-hmm. The rent was something like $350 a month. And it was rent controlled.
Oh, you were
lucky. And there was a lineup. There was a huge lineup of people to rent that house for obvious reasons. And I believe, and I got to know the owner over all those years.
Same owner the whole time.
He owned it.
But the whole time.
Yeah.
He didn't sell it. And
yeah. Uh-huh. And, you know, we were paying less for rent than it would have cost us to carry in interest the money to buy a house. And we were freelance filmmakers, and in retrospect, was it a good choice of that? I don't know, but that's what we did. And so, as I say, there was a lot of people who wanted to rent it. And I think because Ron was at that point a lawyer and working as a lawyer, he only worked as a lawyer for a short time.
But the landlord liked that.
He liked
that
the idea.
Stability.
And I never told him that he quit. So, yeah, no, he liked the stability. And we were a very stable family. But we just ran it like an old farmhouse. We didn't fix it up or care, really.
And you used it.
And we used it well. And when there were big repairs, I hounded him into fixing them. I property managed it for sure.
You hounded the landlord into repairing
them.
If something.
And then I had to hound him into fixing them the right way. And we had ended up, I have to say, over those years, having a really interesting relationship.
Landlord-tenant relationship.
Yeah. Very respectful.
Well, yeah. Well, it sounds if you forced him to keep the house in at least good working order.
Yeah, and you know, he was welcome there anytime, mm-hmm. and I was totally transparent. I never tried to fool him or jerk him around, and he neither. So it was good. Mm-hmm. It was good. And then he died. Before I left, he died. I mean, I went through this end of days where everyone just died, and I left. So it was a very sad...
Oh, so somebody else bought the house and you were forced to move?
No, no. Well, he died and it was up for sale. I left before it was, I got out. Mm-hmm. And it was really hard getting out. Oh, my God. You can imagine all those years?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
and
that was
my partner
home.
Had died. I was a mess. It was the dark time.
So Ron had died. He must have been young.
He did. He died at 58. Out of the blue.
Oh,
shocking. And that was the end. I mean, not only the end that by now the house is getting, you know, and we're thinking of getting out anyway. But I couldn't stay. It had too much, which is why I said I was happy to see it. I, you know, that house doesn't exist anymore because it got gutted completely and completely rebuilt from the inside out. But getting out was all those years, it was like an archaeological dig. And as I was going through it, the basement stairs went out into the back, and I was just taking out boxes and boxes of stuff that I had put there 30, 40 almost years ago, and a one load that the whole back stairs just gave in. And they went. So that was kind of a metaphor.
Yeah.
I stayed till the last woman standing. And by then, you know, my kids were more or less out. But Ollie was only 15, 16. Mm-hmm.
So he moved with you?
Yeah.
And to where you are now?
Yeah. And now he has his own place with his girlfriend. And, yeah, I know, it's all these changes.
They do grow up on us, don't they?
Oh, wow. With a vengeance.
And we have to let go.
Yeah, well, some do, some don't.
You talked about Rochdale. Do you have any feelings now about Rochdale and its contribution or what it meant to our neighborhood?
Huge feelings at Rochdale. I think it contributed to my growth in this neighborhood and the people there, to my connection to the city. You know, Judy Merrill and all the First Nations thing that they had there, the whole floor of First Nations. I don't see that too much in Toronto. They had Theatre Passe-Marie started there. There's all this theatre. I have a PhD in the feelings of democracy. oh man, who else? Friends that I have for life. And it certainly made me interested in living in community. Right from then. I mean, I guess leaving Rochdale, which was all about community and living in the city, and then just pulling out entirely and living in the country, we did keep coming in. We had that place in the market. So between Rochdale and that and all, it's embedded me here. This is, you know, it took me a long time to realize that in Toronto it's East Ender or West Ender.
And that's have you always been West Ender?
And you talk to East Enders and they're always in the East End. I'm a West Ender. And even still, when I was looking, Abraham was my agent, and I was looking at that. I'm not of these people. I'm of those people, whatever that means. Yeah. So I really do identify it from this part of town. And as you say, I'm not that far, but really, I'm here all the time. And now that I'm seeing John, I feel like I have roots here, and David's still here. And yeah.
Well, I understand that, because for me, Harbert Village area is the only place I want to be.
Oh, yeah.
I love it here.
No, and also, I mean, oh my God, the Harbert Bakery support group. That I love those people.
Harbert Bakery support group.
Oh, I love
group.
Susan.
Yeah.
And Raffi, I sort of do, but I love Susan. She's such a sweet person.
Yeah, she is very modest.
And I'd go in there and really, you know, I mean, I did call them my Harvard Bakery support group because they don't know. And they still, when I go, oh, how's Ollie? And I still got all their birthday cakes there. And I now get grand birthday cakes for my granddaughter. And they made one for Sloan's birthday
For whose birthday?
Sloan, her third birthday. And it was her first Harvard Bakery cake. And it had like a little Dora the Explorer. And it was stunning. And her face when she looked at it was like amazing. And the picture of the cake and her little face going, oh, this is so amazing.
Imagine.
So they're very embedded.
Yeah.
And the woman who ran the bookstore for a long time, what was it called?
The Constant Reader. Mm-hmm.
She was great. I miss her. And Ollie, she was very good friends with Ollie. He could go up there by himself. And she would let him in.
It was a wonderful bookstore. I was sorry when they shut it.
Yeah. And even the travel place, I used to always get tickets through there in Drum Travel.
Yes. It's been there a long time.
So I went to Harvard. And my haircutter, Hitoshi, who's friend for life.
Uh-huh. And she's still there.
She's still there. Osiris died.
Yeah.
I know, but, you know, she's still there. I don't know for how much longer. Still.
Yeah. Well, and she's had some trouble with that tenant in front because they're kind of noisy.
She's had a lot of trouble. Yeah. You know, she's tough. Yeah. But I don't, I know.
So this part of Harvard, you have a lot of connections with
Harvard. Oh, yeah, that section of Harvard,
yeah.
That would be, you know, like I kind of radiate outwards if I can, you know, if I can get it around me. That's, and I love doing business with people that are my neighbors. Mm-hmm. I still do business with people I know. I will go to my way to do business, to give the money directly to somebody who's running that business. That's a thrill.
You have a very strong sense of community.
Maybe that's what you'd call it.
But well, it's just one way.
Yeah, I think
that's,
it is.
That's how I'm describing it.
Yeah.
I like, and the loyalty.
I like dealing on this at the street level kind of thing.
Yeah.
I do. It's funny. I don't know why. But maybe growing up in the suburbs, where there's, and I hate that idea of people shutting themselves off, and you know,
I don't agree. And people sometimes talk about privacy. And you can live right here, which is so lively, and have all the privacy that you want. You go into your house and shut the door.
Totally.
Yeah.
No, I mean, people say to me, you're such a hermit. And I am. I am. When I'm not there, then I'm a hermit. Like, that's the meditating thing. That's my other side, and finding the balance.
Well, I can describe myself that way, too. I mean, I'm living and sitting and having this dialogue with you. And I have a lot of that in my life. And then I want silence and solitude.
Mm-hmm. Well, you kind of need that balance.
Sure.
If you're a people person, and then you do need that replenishing. But you know, it's also how I see, you know, being in the world, that's your education. The people you meet and talk to, and how you go about your day, that is how you, where you learn and what you learn and how you learn. And not that I've ever been a big going downtown person, but when I get downtown and I have to do stuff downtown, I just find it an alien and an annoying place. When I have friends too who live here, and they go, I love this city, I just love walking down there and all this stuff, and I'm so not that. Although every now and then I'm really glad that they have the venues here for you know, the dance and the music and the things that come here, I'll go to that. But that, you know, but in terms of being a citizen in the city at large, I'm not. I don't really like it.
Yeah.
I like to be, you know, in this maybe bubble, you could call it, but where I know people and it's more meaningful. I don't like the anonymity of, you can get that anywhere.
Yeah. What are the I think this will be my last question, unless we go off on some tangent. What are the biggest changes that you've seen since you moved here in 1976, and this is 2013? What are the changes that you've seen in this neighborhood?
Well, I could start at what it looks like. There's fewer people on the street. When I walk up, I drive up Borden twice a week. I usually drive just to see if I see anyone. There's one or two of the same guys that sit and lean on their fences that I know around. They're all like, oh, hi. But the houses, the houses are all so tweaked, and house pride, everyone is thinking what they're sitting on. I don't think young families can afford to be here. I don't think, so it feels more and more like suburbs, except with a lot of cars. And the cars.
Many more cars.
Many more cars. You know, there's still people I know. And as I say, I always see someone. But
and you're it's happy more to anonymous. See them, and they're
I am,
happy
and
to
And they're
see
happy
you.
To see me because they go like, who are they? No, who are these people? So it's like, remember me from back in the day, and anyone who's been around for a while on that part of the street or in the area that's serviced by the Harvard Bakery daily, because that would be my walk, you know, I'll know them. I'll recognize them. So, but that's old school now. And I notice that, you know, you go up this all kinds of service vehicles, a lot of Renault, you know, you go up the board, mm-hmm. Renault, plumbers, electricians, painters, it's all about the real estate. Mm-hmm. And I see it next will hit Kensington. I haven't seen it hitting Kensington yet because I haven't looked at that Loblaws thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if nobody goes to it.
To the Loblaws.
There's the one on Queen Street everyone said that, you know, no one will go to and they all go.
Loblaws.
Yeah. I won't go. I feel any need to go. But anyway, I think what's happening is the people owning that real estate want to start wanting to cash in because no one knows, whatever. But certainly it's hit Borden. I mean, the example would be my house. I told you the rent.
Yeah.
So I went through my life paying rent. I didn't even want to tell people because they would just be bitter. The year I moved out, I think I had a whole house. And this is a big house, a huge, big third floor. And I was still paying, even with, you know, all those years, I was paying like something like $1,200, $1,300 a month. Okay, so they sold it for almost $1 million, and it was a mess. It was a mess. Gutted it, and sold it for some enough more than $1 million that to make that possible. And it's just the same house, really. It's got an academic from U of T. So that's the kind of thing that's going on. So nobody really can live there now unless they inherited wealth or they've got some job. And why anyone would put themselves through for a house on Borden Street at this point, I don't know. I guess that's life in the city.
Those are some changes that you feel are unfortunate changes.
Well, you know, that it's part of a very big, it's funny, going back when we were young and moving in here, the vision that I had, that we shared, the vision of what community or what life going forward might be like, has not materialized. And in fact, it's a pretty dismal vision now, I see.
The neighborhood.
No, what? I wouldn't. You know, the neighborhood city. Is just a symptom. It's the city. It's the city. It's the culture. It's the country. It's the way of. It's the way we've. It's the way politics have gone. It's the way money. It's just not. It's gone in a different way than what I had hoped. So I see it on Borden. I see it everywhere. So I think maybe the writing's on the wall, unless there are some big cultural and social changes. Which I would like to see, but I don't know how it's going to happen.
Who our political
leaders
are.
Well, you know, there's another whole discussion, but we have corporate politics, and we're locked in, and I don't know what we do.
I think we're moving off, and you and I can sit and talk, and that would be fine.
But I just see this as a symptom of what's going on, mm-hmm. and you know, like I still like to be in the city in that way. But I'm finding more and more things I don't want to be part of.
But you might be coming back to live.
I want things to be on a human scale, street level. Yeah. You know,
Jane Jacobs.
Yes. Yeah. Well. Yeah. Yeah. What would she? She'd be turning in her. But I might be on Lippincott, and that'd be fun. But I have a feeling that what might happen is we'll down the road we'll both sell our places and start fresh with a place that's ours together, because that's the next step, I guess, on the adventure. So,
well, you and I might sit and talk for a few more minutes, but in terms of recording,
that's all I said. I think I was such a lucky person to be here when I was here, and I thank Ted Steiner, Guru Teshkar, for the short-term rental on Palmerston. And also, that got me going in yoga, because they have a great yoga thing. And then finding this.
This being?
The place on Borden. It was like a charm. Yeah. Right. And it was a good house, and have many incredible memories.
Well, Roberta King, mm-hmm. thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks for interviewing me.